Thanks very much, and great discussion, and hopefully, you know, this talk will kind of fit into that discussion and lead to some more discussion. So I'm really thrilled to talk about this work, and I try to think of it as long term, although it's 4 years. So starting off, you know, we've heard even today and throughout the week that many studies, they're looking at cover crops and they're looking at the effects in the fall and in the following season. And that's a very valid approach, and it's applicable for first-time cover crop users, I guess. And the previous talk said, you know, what about these long-term studies? If we want to be meaningful for growers who plant cover crops year after year after year, I think we need those type of studies. We do have many studies in North America that compare cover crops as a treatment within the system. So there you can compare with rye or without rye. However, it doesn't. Those systems, while valuable, do not allow for comparison among different cover crops. And the question that I'm often asked is, I use oats, should I be using something else? Is there something better? And that's kind of how we've approached this study in our systems. So I'm at Richtown. I'm a professor in soil science at the University of Guelph. I'm located at their Richtown campus. We are an hour from the Canadian-U.S. border, and you can see our monthly precipitation is 80 millimeters. Our corn heat units, 3,200. I've put here the probability of frost. You know, perhaps I should have just put the min-max temperature, but for cover cropping, it's really about when is it going to winter kill. So I have those data there. The other thing to note is the experimental sites that I'm talking about today. It's a Brookston sandy loam in the gray soil class, which after listening to many of the U.S. sites, I understand that means not a whole heck of a lot. That's our Canadian system, so please apologize for that. But it's a nice sandy loam soil, good organic matter, excellent water holding capacity. This is great vegetable production land. Looking at our fall cover crop season, so here's what we do in our systems, and you can compare to your own. So after we take off the main crop, we will cultivate once or twice, depending on the main crop, and that's mainly a disking or a cultivation. We do not apply nitrogen or other fertilizer to our cover crops. We try to drill them in after wheat or our vegetable crops. So that means we've got an earlier planting window and don't have that same challenges in a corn rotation versus corn-soybean rotation. We leave our cover crops over winter, they either winter kill or not, and you can see here a substantial amount of biomass when we can get them in early August. The following year, we're going to terminate the rye with glyphosate. A couple of weeks later, or shortly after terminating, we're going to incorporate the residue. We apply P&K according to the crop, and we have nitrogen at a full rate or a zero rate, and that depends on which is our main crop. So in these trials, we are keeping our cover crops on the same plots, and we're changing our main crop. And we follow main crop production systems. There's no treatment on there other than the nitrogen fertility. So here's our system. We have two sites, and they're separated by year. We'll just call them A and B. We started in 2007 and 2008 with the fall cover crop. We continue with wheat, corn, spring wheat, processing tomato, and then field corn. Our cover crops are listed here, so we have our no cover, oats, cereal rye, oilseed radish, and a mixture of oilseed radish and rye. So those are our cover crops. They were planted for 4 years in the same plots. We want to look at the cumulative effects over that 4-year term. I should mention here that because we're planting in early August, we do get substantial biomass growth. I chose not to show that data, but at least 2,000 kilograms per hectare, 3,000, 4,000 is quite typical. We will collect biomass in the fall and in the spring. So we're a split plot, randomized complete block design with 4 reps at 2 sites, cover crop being the main crop effect, and then split plot is the nitrogen to 0 or the recommended rate. So we applied nitrogen to the sweet corn crop and to the tomato crop. Okay, so the spring wheat, we just gave blanket application of nitrogen, to the field corn, blanket application of nitrogen. So really, the only where we're looking at a nitrogen effect is in tomatoes and sweet corn. Our fixed and random effects are there, and then we did some contrast looking at all cover crops, the treatments with radish, and the treatments with grasses. Compare those to the no-cover control. I collaborate with Dr. Richard Vine. He's an economist on our campus, and I give him the yield data, and he calculates the profit margins. So the profit margins is just the revenue from the crop, subtract the costs associated with planting the cover crop. So it doesn't take into the other costs of productions. Oh, excellent. Yeah. You're kidding me. So we have, he chooses to include the cost of a custom planting, recognizing that growers could pay different amounts, but it's custom planting, custom fertilizer application, and herbicide for the rye treatment. And those are the figures there. I didn't convert them to U.S. because the dollar wasn't very good, so we just use Canadian dollars. Richard did a pairwise comparison and a regression. The regression analysis I won't comment about. It didn't show a lot of effects, okay? So you're aware of that. Not a lot of effects are showing up in the regression analysis, but we are seeing some effects with the pairwise. Okay, so individually we've looked at these crops, and we can say, or I can say to the growers, it's as good as or better with the cover crop than without. Some years some crops are better, some years the other ones, but we're never at a yield that it's hurting our yield. However, I wanted to know what's the overall effect of 4 years, so I added up the tonnage. So we're in tons per hectare, which makes sense for tomatoes and sweet corn. It doesn't make a lot of sense for field corn or spring wheat from some perspective. So we'll show the fixed effects first down here. We never see an interaction of the cover crop with the nitrogen rate. So part of that could be because we're only in 2 crops of the 4 years that we're not seeing an interaction, but we never see a nitrogen rate by cover crop interaction. Definitely the nitrogen, though, is increasing yield, and that's, of course, what we would expect. So if we sum the yield over the 4 years, we're seeing higher yields with oilseed radish and oilseed radish plus rye. And that was statistically different than having no cover crop in the system. And profit margins are shown somewhat similarly, only oilseed radish shows up higher there. The contrast, though, are showing significant differences, $260 over that 4 years with a cover crop than without. So a negative number means higher with the cover crop. You're getting better profit margins with the cover crop. So then the question becomes, all right, I'm adding these yields together, and it doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of talking to growers. Yeah, I added sweet corn yield with tomato yields. And so we wanted to get something a little bit more relative, or maybe a better way of explaining it, I hope. So we set the no cover crop as a control, and we set it that the control that received no nitrogen fertilizer. We take the delta yield, which is just our treatment subtract our control, and then I'm going to present it as relative delta yield, which is divided by the control yield, so yield or profit margins, whichever one, and times by 100 to get a percent. Showing the delta yields again, so we're seeing similar trends, no interaction, higher with oilseed radish, and no difference with those other ones. However, if we do this percent contrast, we're seeing a 6% increase in relative yield. So the difference between the control is 6%. That is quite significant. There's not a lot of things that you can do in your management practice other than probably chemical that will increase your yields by 6% over the 4 years. Relative delta yields, there's profit margins. Sorry, for profit margins, there's going to be an interaction because we've set this to zero. And as soon as you set that to zero, you get the interaction because here you don't have the cost of the fertilizer. Here you've got the cost of the fertilizer, but your yields are quite high. So probably less interesting to look at relative delta yield or delta profits here. But relative delta yield, I would say, is probably the most interesting. Your profit margins, though, still are beneficial. So compared to no cover crop, you're getting a 6.6% increase in profit margins over that 4 years. And we're seeing oilseed radish coming out higher than the grasses. I'm wondering if that's just our rotation, right? And so we don't know that. But it helps me answering questions for growers as to which is the best. What causes this yield boost? I mean, that's the magic question. The magic answer is soil health. Oh, yeah, great. Thank you. Okay, so we think part of it is nitrogen dynamics, but it's not the full part that's giving that extra boost. And we know that, yes, we can say we've conserved. Oh, I can see it nicely here. That has gone well for everyone else.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. It stops the clock.
Sorry. Well, you can just go into the discussion.
So we've got PAN. PAN is plant available nitrogen. So plant available nitrogen, so we add what's in the soil as mineral N, and we add what was in the crop at harvest. So that's above ground biomass in the fruit and the shoots, or the grain and the shoots. And so part of that explanation of why it's giving us a yield boost could be nitrogen. However, because we can see in the tomato crop here higher plants available nitrogen. However, it doesn't explain all of it because we don't get the interaction. We don't get that nitrogen fertilizer with cover crop interaction. And we don't see any interaction with tomato yield or other crop yields. We don't see it with soil mineral N and fruit and shoot nitrogen content. So if we were really going to say that it was a nitrogen contribution, we should see that interaction, that things are measuring differently with fertilizer than without fertilizer with the different cover crops, and we don't see it. So it's not entirely nitrogen dynamics. We have another trial, a long-term trial, where we've established in 2008, and we grew snap beans for 4 years, and we're seeing that oats are coming out. This is a 4-year average. So I can say now to growers for snap beans, I would recommend oats. This was a split plot design, so I grew snap beans and sweet corn at the same time. And data is a lot more messier with sweet corn. But overall, we're seeing our 4-year average yields with sweet corn, with our cover crops, as being as well, they're better than the control, but more variation within years. So based on this long-term 4-year cover crop rotations, we can say that we're definitely getting 6 to 6.6% yield and profit margin increases. It's likely not all nitrogen-based, and perhaps that's because of its sandy loam soil. We also know to get a nitrogen credit, we need to be using legumes. And so the yield boosts soil health. And then my questions, you know, can it be measured? What is the best measurement? We've looked at drift spectroscopy, looking at polysaccharide carbon and evolution, and that relates kind of nicely to our cover crops, but it was an incubation study, so, you know, some caution there. We looked at aggregate stability, and we couldn't see it if we didn't measure it the year of the cover crop growth. So this was measured the spring after field crop. So we had 4 years of cover crops, grew field corn. Next spring go in, couldn't measure any effect on soil aggregate. So there's lots of questions that still remain. And I'll leave that to acknowledge funding partners. And thank you. And are there any questions? Oh, and I forgot to mention that I didn't convert my snap bean or sweet corn yield into metric, so that you guys who think that up in Canada we can just get away with metric, it's not true. We have to do imperial units for our growers. So, are there any questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question. That is a possibility. I guess we're not using a book value. We're using the industry, so the processing vegetable industry standards, what they would recommend to their growers. So that gives me a little bit more confidence that we're at a level that's comparable. We don't see any evidence in the crop, except for with those zero ends. So, but it is a possibility.
How about
plant? Oh, excellent. So in the years we grew sweet corn and tomato, I had the pathologist come and scout the plots. For the sweet corn, there were some years when rust was higher. I don't remember the specifics, but the take home was that in some years it was some cover crops, in other years it was the other cover crop that could give a little bit higher or lower. Never consistent that you could say, plant this and you'll be fine. Similar thing in the tomatoes with insects and disease. We never saw really huge pressures. Now I have to use the caveat that we were on a spray program. So we were doing a regular management and applying fungicides and insecticides. So, that's what we've done. So in the tomatoes, it's bacterial speck and spot are the main ones. There was some anthracnose in some years. The bottom line in terms of tomato fruit quality, though, there was no differences between the cover crops in inspection of the fruit. We did fruit quality, and, you know, there was some interesting discussion at other sessions about how management might impact quality. So the quality that the processors are looking at is pH, soluble solids and color, and there was no impact of the cover crops on that, on those quality parameters.
Yeah, we're in discussion, so.
Sure.
She stays up there. That's right.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the carbon to nitrogen ratio of oilseed rape? And do you usually get a lot of rain when you give the oil? And who is after when you start planting the oil?
Yeah, good question about the C-DAN ratio with the oilseed radish. Tends to be somewhat lower than the cereals. However, because we get it in quite early, we do see stem elongation, and that increases the C to N ratio. I do have those numbers, and they do fluctuate with year and with planting date is the main thing. So in our systems, we are planting the main crop at the end of May, and we still have some spring rains. On average, it's 80 millimeters per month, which in July and August isn't enough to meet ET demands, evapotranspiration demands.
Let's thank our speaker first.
Get me off the hot seat.